What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of Healthspan Academy. I'm your host, Craig Shearhart, and joining me today is my special guest, Jackson Clark, who is an osteopath for some high-level athletes. He started his academic career with a Bachelor of Science in Clinical Science from University of Victoria in Australia, completed a Master's in Osteopathic Medicine from Victoria University, and then a Master's in Strength and Conditioning from Edith Cowan University. And he's been an osteopathic practitioner since the last 7 years or so. And he's worked with some high-level athletes, including Nelly and Jess Korda. And we're going to talk all things about what he does clinically and how he helps his athletes resolve pain and improve performance. Jackson, thanks for joining me today, man.
Thanks, Craig. It's lovely to be here. And thanks for the nice little introduction there.
Oh, cheers, man. Yeah. Great to get connected here. So I want to start the conversation with how osteopath, the discipline kind of came into your life and how you chose that as a career. I know it's kind of new, exciting, and it's developed pretty rapidly over the last 10 years or so. Talk about how all that started for you.
Yeah. So I guess like many practitioners, and I sort of played a lot of sport growing up and had various sort of ailments and injuries and sort of just came across a bunch of sort of physical therapists, chiropractors and osteopaths and really sort of connected well with osteopathy and just got some good results and had a few practitioners that really helped me a lot. And that sort of piqued my interest, I guess. Cool. And so then I, through my sort of formative years of high school, looked at, you know, potentially a career there. And in Australia, the training for physical therapy involves being in a hospital sort of space, which was a bit of a deterrent for me. So I sort of looked at osteo and finished high school and went, oh, well, I don't really know what else I want to do. So let's give this a run. And nice. You know, here I am. 15 years later, nearly. So,
cool.
It's treated me well.
That's awesome. Yeah, I kind of followed the similar, like, same kind of motives, but a different path, I guess. I was injured all through high school, sports and stuff like that. And I just got interested in the biomechanics, and that kind of led me through into coaching eventually. Yeah, through a couple wasted years in academics, found myself as a coach. So you've worked with some high level people. Who have you been most excited to work with since you got started with this?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, so the current girls I'm working with, Jess and Nelly Korda, have been really good, but that's only just sort of got started this year, which has been great. And then before that, so pre-COVID, I worked with some other female golfers. So they're all really, really good to work with. And this new sort of position is a little bit more specialized in just working with the two of them, which is great. Whereas before it was kind of more in working with five players at once. So you sort of be almost like not quite a traveling clinic, but you're definitely doing more treatments and sort of a lot more logistics and movement. Whereas now, with these guys, it's very much, focusing more on them, I guess.
Yeah. Has that become more the norm for pro athletes? I feel like there's a handful, at least the higher level people that just like literally have a team of people that follow them around, like LeBron and stuff like that. But are you noticing a trend in that direction?
Yeah, definitely. So I've done a little bit of work in the tennis space too. And in tennis, obviously, it's a bit more popular. There's more money. And so there's more resources are able to be pooled, I guess. And so you'll see with both men's and women's athletes there that they have more like their own physio or their own trainer or their own, you know, whatever their team, they sort of decide what they want to have a part of, but they'll have their own personal sort of setup, you know. And even in men's golf, that's more the case. And I think we'll see that probably is the pathway that women's golf will sort of follow. But I think I saw a sort of pretty crazy stat that LeBron spends something like $1 million US per his body, which is incredible and
wild. You know, that's why he's in year 17 and still kicking. Well, sort of. He got injured again this year, but had a crazy year though. It's wild. Like the most points ever in year 19? That's like absurd.
Something like that.
So I mean, it's small chump change for him too, right? But that seems like the dream, just having this team of people just helping you avoid injuries and stay, keep him caught top shape.
Exactly.
Let's talk about some of the common injuries you see now that you've kind of zeroed in on golf. There's a lot of rotation in golf. Do you see some trunk stuff, some back stuff? What are the common ailments that you tend to look at?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, lower backs is probably your biggest area of concern in terms of, I guess, common area of complaint. But then also a lot of wrist, like overuse issues in the wrist area, obviously with impact and, you know, just hitting a lot of balls. Beyond there, you know, hips are a bit more of a common one too. A lot of typically interrelated with the lower back, and even some thoracic spine work. You know, I feel like a lot of it, like you identified, comes from that rotation and, and depending on the player and the body, where they get their rotation from.
Yeah, fair enough. And are there specific issues? Obviously, they've invested in yourself as an osteopath, and I guess you have a strength and conditioning background, which helps a little bit. Are there specific injuries that tend that you see that tend to respond best to osteo as opposed to other disciplines?
I mean, yes and no. I'm a little bit biased, but
fair enough.
I think I would have in my early years of my career, I would have been very bullish that, you know, osteo is the way and everyone needs to do that. But I think it's very much across a lot of the disciplines. It's kind of, if you've got a good or a great practitioner in each of the different modalities, you're kind of going to get the same outcome. It's just maybe some of the processes are slightly different.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, I don't think there's a huge difference, but I think it's getting the right outcome that's really the aim of the game there.
For sure. Yeah. I love that. So talk about some of the solutions in your kind of trick bag, so to speak. Like, what are some of the tactics that you found have been helpful for those low back issues for the athletes you work with?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess with my osteo background and my strength and conditioning background is I kind of operate along a bit of a spectrum of interventions. And so depending upon what's going on and where they are and, you know, whether it's acute or it's chronic or what needs to be done is you can do anything from, you know, some pretty heavy sort of hands-on work, whether that be, you know, soft tissue work, adjustments, joint articulations, some dry needling, or further down the S&C kind of space whereby we're using more movement-based interventions and really getting some load into the body.
Yeah.
And I guess it really depends on the athlete and where they're at and what their pain levels are like. And
so
I guess that's probably the trick bag is then using your clinical decision making to really pick whereabouts you need to start on that spectrum.
Yeah. Fair enough. I love that. I've had a little mix of all that stuff and I'm a huge fan of dry needling. That's like, I just like, especially those tissues you can't release kind of on your own with a lacrosse ball, right? Or even just basic massage, just kind of getting that deep rooted stuff. And that's been huge. So I'm a big believer in that.
100% agree.
Yeah. Let's talk about modalities versus manual therapy. Are there like beyond dry needling, do you get into like tens units and that kind of stuff? Or do you believe in that? Like where do you lie on that spectrum?
Yeah, I in the training with osteo in Australia, it's primarily hands on, and it's sort of we tend to pride ourselves on our hands on skills, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So my training didn't really involve a whole lot of modalities.
Yeah,
I mean, I think again, potentially a time and a space for that. I don't use them personally, but I think if you have access to one and you can use one, it's probably something that you can do.
Yeah.
At your own discretion rather than it needing to be something that's done by a practitioner.
Yeah.
It's probably my sort of thoughts on that, I guess.
Yeah. Fair enough. So after reversing injuries, the goal is, ultimate goal is to prevent injuries. So when you're in that space, how does your approach to your athletes and your kind of clinical procedure change when you're looking like prophylactically and injury prevention? Is that when you shift your lens towards more strength and conditioning to kind of like stabilize and keep the athletes from repeat injuries? Or how does that process look?
Yeah, 100%. So I guess through my osteo training, it allows you to use sort of to transfer a little bit of that, the hands-on stuff into some very basic sort of rehab kind of exercise prescription space. But I guess with the S&C side of things, it really allows me to confidently sort of progress through the gears there and really get into some sort of, you know, strength building movements, which is sort of where I think your preventative side of things really occurs. Preventative and then, you know, performance optimization.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, is probably one and the same thing really in terms of preventing injury and improving performance. But
yeah.
I think for me, that's where I am really attracted to right now. You know, the hands-on stuff is great, but it's more sort of end to get them into a gym-based space to then really build on what we've sort of been working on.
Yeah, that's awesome. I recently interviewed a Canadian speed skater, Laurent Dubois, and his trainer is also his physio. So then he was talking about how it's just great to have that as one piece. You have you're not butting heads in programming. It's all kind of on the same spectrum. I feel like that's probably the direction you're going to see a lot of high level athletes go to. So I feel like you're ahead of the curve a little bit there.
100%.
Yeah. Let's get into the visceral piece. This is I know that's I don't know how much of an emphasis it is in the Australian curriculum, but I know in Canada, it's to me, that's like, it was like this wooey wooey thing. Like, what is happening right now in my body? But you leave and somehow your musculoskeletal issues are relieved from like working on the visceral piece. So talk about that kind of utility, how you start to access some of the visceral work that you do, and basically how it's executed and how it kind of fits in together with like sports performance.
Yeah. So, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't do a heap of the visceral work. I've done sort of the bare bones basics of it, back at university. And it's definitely something that I would say is almost outside of my scope of practice now. But I think, it's definitely a bit of an art form in terms of, gaining post-grad education in that and then developing that sort of skill set.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think there definitely is a time and a space for that. Mm-hmm. But I'd be lying to you if I said I was the person to sort of really, really be diving into that with.
Yeah, that's all good, man. Cool. Let's shift into the applied principles. Have you found the osteopathic principles that helped your own kind of self rehab stuff? Like, how do we scale? How do we take the osteopathic principles, the rehab stuff, and then paste that into something that's looks more like self-care? Are there pieces of that you can do on your own, or how do you have, like, what's your take on that?
Yeah, 100%. I think for me, and this is probably then using scaling into that, the S&C side of things is I like to try and enable the patient to drive that care. Obviously with professional athletes, it's a little bit different, but when you're working in your clinical practice and you're dealing with people in pain, there's such a building body of research to sort of show that it needs to be patient driven, that if you're reliant upon a practitioner, you're going to continue to sort of track that way.
Yeah.
Exactly. You're band-aiding over a bullet hole, it's fine if that's what you want to do. But most people, when you explain it to them like that, they're not super interested in that. Yeah. So I guess, it's about yes, you need the assessment. Yes, you need the intervention. But then it's about patient education to show this person, this is what you need to do and this is how you do it. So, once you figure out what needs to be done, definitely can be driven by the client or by the patient. And I think, you already hit the nail on the head. You've got your TENS machines, you've got your lacrosse balls, you've got your mobility drills. That's sort of your initial starting point. But then it's like, once I can access that range of motion, how do I then build on that to prevent this reoccurring?
Right.
And that kind of comes back to sort of, I mean, optimization of just being a person, right? Is being able to do the activities that you want to do, be able to, go to work and get through a day's work pain free, to be able to go to the gym and train or play whatever sport you would like to do. These sorts of things is really where we see people sort of fall down or have issues. And so I think showing someone what needs to be done to be able to do that is important, as opposed to them sort of going, oh, I need table based interventions. I need, I need to be adjusted, or I need dry needling, or I need this. It's kind of like you need that to facilitate the change in your nervous system or in your body, but then we need to show you how to access that longer term.
Yeah, I fully agree. It is nice just kind of sitting there being kind of waited on, right? Once in a while, but you gotta 100%. Put in the work. And I think the main piece that you miss, if that's your mentality, is building like active range of motion. Like you can get work done, you can get soft tissue work to open up. Maybe it's a knot, gets you further towards your end range, but you're not really creating any stability there. So I feel like that's where, as an athlete or as a client, you need to take some ownership. You actually have to work to kind of create stability in that new range that this practitioner is trying to build for you.
Exactly. Trying to find the why, you know, why is this come about? What activity yeah. or what joint or what muscle, what structure, what's causing this to continue to return back to this, you know, range of motion that you have access to, and how can we influence that in a positive manner, I guess.
Yeah. I love that. It's just not like the sexy thing, right? You know, like no one brags about, I did these sweet pale and rail the other days. you wouldn't believe how great my shoulder feels like.
Well, 100%. It's kind of, I don't know. I almost liken it as it's kind of a healthcare model versus a business model too, right? Yeah. Because as a practitioner, it's like if someone's willing to come back to you for two sessions a week for 12 weeks and you say to them, hey, you know, I only need to see you once a week for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, there's your catch 22, if you will.
Yeah, true enough. Awesome. So, Jackson, I want to shift into kind of your personal priorities around your own health. And like what's at the top of the list right now? We have mental health and we have a physical health, and sometimes we're pulled in different directions kind of based on what we see clinically or with our clients, stuff like that. What is at the top of your list right now of your own kind of well-being, and what do your habits look like around that?
Well, for me, I think like mental and physical health is so interrelated that if you're nailing one, you're most likely seeing some positive effects in the other. So, yeah, I mean, with the amount of travel I'm doing, I really try to get out and about. I feel like getting out for a walk or run or some sort of movement in the morning. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be strenuous, just to sort of get the body going. Some sunlight exposure. If I'm really feeling motivated, some cold water exposure, but it kind of depends on the day. I'd like to say that I do that consistently, but I'd be lying. Then, you know, probably some caffeine of some shape or form. Coffee's a massive sort of part of Melbourne culture. So I try and take that with me wherever I go and get out and experience some of the coffee shops across the world.
That's awesome. Cool.
But that's sort of the nuts and bolts at the start of the day. And then if I can get a training session in there, on top of that, I'd be stoked.
Awesome. And what is like a workout look like for you? Are you like doing like just basic functional fitness? Are you doing like a bit of bodybuilding accessory stuff, or what is your structure look like typically?
At the moment, I'm running on I've sort of self-described as a move better program. It's kind of what I sort of figure I need with my body and to be able to sort of keep doing the things I want to do. So I'm still doing a bit of running. Got a few hip issues, so I do a lot of posterior chain work through the lower body, and then just some more like bodybuilding accessory work for the upper body, just to sort of try and keep things moving. Cool. Try and add in some loaded mobility too, because I'm like most men out there, as stiff as a board, so keep somewhat limber is pretty important.
Yeah, that's an ongoing battle for me too, man. I feel it. Yeah. So what's on tap for the rest of 22? Are you just touring for the rest of the golf season with your athletes? Is anything else going on professionally?
The next sort of 8 weeks are pretty hectic for me. I'm sort of back and forth to Australia a few times, and then I'll be based back in Melbourne for a few months back at the clinic I work at Kinematics in Richmond.
Cool.
So I'll sort of be there, and then I come back to the States for another probably 4 or 5 week block, and that will sort of see me out for the year in terms of the travel. So this front end has been quite busy. That's kind of me in a nutshell at the moment, but you know, everything's subject to change. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, it's been an awesome chat, Jackson. What's the best means for people to check out more of your content and follow your work?
So I guess the easiest one is either LinkedIn or on Instagram. So Osteo J Clark is my professional handle. Okay. If anyone's interested in sort of seeing what I'm up to out and about, that's sort of where you'll find me.
Awesome. We'll link to that in the show notes. Well, appreciate the time, man. We'll have to catch up soon.
Yeah. Great. Thank you, Craig.
Cheers. All right. Thanks for tuning in this episode, guys. We'll see you next time on HealthSpan Academy. Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Thank you so much for supporting this channel. This has been a fun project. We are growing in viewership every single week, and we obviously couldn't do that without you. So thank you for continuing to tune in. I really hope you're getting value out of the programming and the content. Just wanted to give you a heads up. I've been working on a book on health and longevity the last couple of years. Been collaborating with my colleague, Dr. Dan Vitale, who's an expert in the field as well. And we've basically just kind of summarized the literature, some of the techniques that we found really useful in the world of biohacking, what our exercise regimen looks like, what's, you know, cardio type stuff is going to help us live longer and healthier, mobility work, nutrition. We've covered the whole spectrum, everything that you can basically be in control of in your health and fitness kind of moving forward to help you live as healthily as possible for as long as possible. And it's available free for download. So if you click on the YouTube banner, you'll see a link to download the blueprint. It's also on our Instagram profile or on the website. You can click on fivepillarmethod.com/optimize to get your free copy of the book. And I hope you enjoy it. Hope you're keeping well. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.